Good morning and welcome to How You Do Anything is How You Do Everything. Good morning, Sherry.
Good morning, Ashwini.
So we had a couple of assignments on Friday, what makes you feel secure, record and listen. On Saturday, what do you trade for that security, record and listen. And then we were referred back to a previous assignment that we did, which was to list 10 things that we considered most important, and then asked to reduce that list of 10 to the 3 things you consider most important, and then to look at the process of what that was like for us.
Big weekend.
Big weekend. Mm-hmm. All right, here's our first caller. You're now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourselves?
Hello, this is Rita from Ontario.
Hello, Rita.
Hi,
hello, Rita.
Can you hear me? Can you hear me all right?
Beautifully.
Okay, great. I'm interested in, I was really interested in looking at what do I do to feel secure. And what came up for me was, if this makes sense, seeming to have control over how practice works in my mind and how I practice physically as well, like the things that I'm doing. And I had a little boy just under 3 months ago, and he's not a great sleeper. And so I've experienced a huge lack of sleep and just obviously a change in how much I can physically practice recording and listening and meditating and things like that. And I've been experiencing a level of depression and identification that I haven't in years. And I'm just noticing that that I want to sort of see that as making me feel not secure. So in my mind, I feel like it seems much more difficult to come to the breath or to connect with gratitude. And I'm checking in with how I feel a lot more, I guess, strongly than I did before I had my baby or that I have in years. And yeah, so I guess
okay.
That's what came to me.
Yeah, may I?
Yes, please.
Okay. So there are two things in there, Rita. The first one is control, which is, you know, where you started out, which is I bet we could all relate to using practice as a way of feeling we're in control. And the second thing is the change, right? So I can't remember exactly how you phrased it, but so things have changed in your life. That would be a no kidding, right? Everything has changed in your life. Every single thing about we could do those. At the moment you had that baby, if it had dropped in, life as I have known it is over. You would have been really well served, especially if that could have been seen as a positive. Okay, one phase of my life has ended. I'm in a completely new phase of life. So this takes period of adjustment to a whole new level. And of course, what conditioned mind wants to do is just superimpose life as it was onto life as it is. So it's doing that moment by moment, but we don't notice it. When it does it in a really big life event like this, we have a chance to see it. But what we're told about it is it should be the way it was. And there's something wrong with you that it isn't.
Right. Right.
When we step back, we can see that the idea that your life would in any way be the way it was before is ridiculous.
Huh.
Right? You don't even look like you looked a year ago.
Right.
Yeah. Your body is completely different. Your emotions are completely different. Your hormones are certainly completely different. Right? Everything about you is completely different.
Yes, and I was really happy to have it drop in the other day that I was doing the left-hand and right-handed recording, and, you know, it started out with, oh, you know, I've been stuck here all day, and, you know, my baby will only sleep on top of me, and, you know, blah, 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 and what dropped in from
really
the
mentor... It's really hard to get anything done.
right. And what dropped in from the mentor, which was just felt so powerful, was, like, that it's a choice that I did that so that my baby could sleep, you know, like that.
Yes.
It felt empowering, you know, instead of I have to do this to I'm doing this for him. Yeah,
that's right. And for the heart, there is that clarity that this is a tremendous opportunity to experience unconditional love. For him and for her.
Yes.
And, of course, what ego wants to turn it into is you're a victim, he's a burden, this is a mistake, there really is something wrong with you. If you were the right person, you would just be blissfully happy as you're sleep-deprived and unable to do anything except be there for this little person.
Right.
So here's my encouragement for you. First of all, to see this as the biggest period of adjustment you've ever experienced in your entire life, and to become fascinated about everything that happens with you in this period. Now, again, we could all be doing that every day, but the stakes aren't high enough in most cases, for people to choose it. Okay?
Right.
But the stakes are really high for you.
Yes.
And so you will choose it. And you'll watch how when you're with the mentoring presence, when you're here, you can see the importance of this, the value of this time. I was just talking with a mother yesterday whose kids are 6 and 8. And talking about what that's like, and I said, because you know, you have to see this as a time for you, because very shortly those kids are going to turn around and look at you and go, I want to be as far away from you as I can possibly get, okay? Because I'm pretty sure you are spawn of the devil and you're trying to ruin my life, which is a natural progression, right, in people's lives, right? So to realize that this is your choice and this is a finite, really precious time for you. And as you say, it all of it is your choice.
Yes, and the encouragement to treasure myself takes on a whole new meaning. And
You know, this is the assignment for all of us, but when we're in that, the voices are going to try to kill you over this place.
Yeah.
Then to make as your top priority stepping back enough to watch what they are trying to do, right? That disidentification, staying in, those voices are going to try to kill me. I really need not to listen and believe them, but I need to watch them so that I can stay at a distance, keep my relationship with the mentor, with people who love me, and with this little person.
Yes, thank you. Thank you so much.
Oh, you're so welcome. Stay in touch, huh?
Okay, we'll do.
All
thank
right.
you.
All
okay.
Right. Thanks, Rita.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, Rita.
That was so such an important conversation, Sherry, for us to recognize just what conditioning does. The thing that dropped in is it's the only thing that doesn't change and therefore projects that nothing in life does.
Oh, what a really good point. Yeah.
And so, and when we're identified with it, the assumption,
isn't it?
Yes, it's always looking for the same, it is the same thing over and over and over again.
Yeah.
And so when we're identified with it, it's like, yeah, it's sort of the illusion of permanence, a false continuity. And so to recognize that everything has changed requires us to step out of it and look at and be present to how life is changing all the time.
Yes. Yeah. And that awareness that sometimes circumstances are big enough that we're required to pay attention at that level, which is a gift.
Well, exactly. And I was just looking at that sometimes that life has to, as you said, nobody willingly goes into big life events, right? And so if we are on the path to awakening, if life is on the path to awakening to itself, then sometimes the stakes have to be high enough in order to motivate that choice.
Mm-hmm.
That moment where you recognize, I am doing this for love. And let me not forget that love is what it is, whether it's, you know, projected onto a little child or projected onto the universal unconditional love, that is what we're choosing. And conditioning wants to focus the attention on what's wrong with the trivial, the banal, the circumstances, so that we'll forget that.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. So again, I was talking with somebody yesterday who was talking about children and how they disappoint, and especially as they get older, and now they're supposed to be grown-ups, and they're supposed to be doing the right thing, and they're supposed to be meeting our expectations, and talking about how little, how not at all that serves us. That rejecting people or criticizing them or judging them doesn't change them, and it doesn't make our life any better. But choosing unconditional love, regardless of the circumstances, changes everything.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it does. It's that control thing over again, right? That somehow the experience of I have control over everyone else's experience, then I'm all right. And if they disappoint me, then I'm not.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But choosing unconditional love, we're just never disappointed.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. it's ultimately the experience of acknowledging that our well-being is not conditional.
Yes. Yes. Well stated. That's it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And
all right, here's
may I say one other thing, Ashwini?
Oh yeah.
Because in a funny way, to get that, we have control.
Yes.
Right? Because that's the one place that we can influence. We can choose unconditional love and never be disappointed.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That's within our power.
Yes. And what I was looking at, you know, Sherry, that word control is so loaded that part of what I think you're pointing at is it's actually not control that's the issue. It's the assumption of a lack of choice.
Mm-hmm.
And so
when
we get to the place that the choice that I have in every moment is to either be here or be in a conversation about what's wrong with here, then we have ultimate freedom.
Yeah.
Whereas conditioning wants to point us to the fact that control is over the circumstances so that I'll be okay, which is a recipe for suffering because we have absolutely no control over circumstances, but we certainly have choice over our experience.
Yeah. You just said something else that is fabulous, and that is that the conversation in conditioned mind is always about what's wrong with here. That's so clarifying, right? Here, is where all the goodness is. Here is everything, right? And the conversation in conditioned mind is always about what's wrong with here. That's astounding to put together.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. All right.
Okay, well,
ready
someone
to go.
Else now. Here
all
we
right.
go. Next caller, you're now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself? Hello?
Hello. Oh, I thought we had somebody.
Well, I think they muted themselves.
Hello?
Ah, there she is.
Oh, I did the mute myself and unmute myself.
Until I confuse myself. And then I can't tell, am I or am I not? And I'm talking, but is anybody hearing? And yeah, we hear you.
Okay. I'm having that usual energy surge.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's great, isn't it? We should do this more often. We could just live in that. Whee!
I am doing the exercise about what are you most insecure about and how does this insecurity affect your life.
Uh-huh.
it took me a long time to get past the voice that says you shouldn't be insecure about anything, et cetera. Uh-huh. But once I did, I really got to something that the voices talk to me about pretty much every day, which is that that I will never be passionate about passionate about anything again. Nothing will ever get my enthusiasm flowing again. And I tend to believe it, you know. I take the path of least resistance and believe it, and then it kind of becomes true in that very ego-identified way.
Mm-hmm. There's not a lot of passion on the path of least resistance.
No. Good point.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so then I just kind of live in a low-grade defeat and acquiescence. And I feel like I'm just kind of drifting, like I'll just sort of drift on to the grave.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, that is such disconnection from any kind of true nature or love with capital L or the mentor.
Mm-hmm.
And doing this exercise just really brings it all into stark relief, as we say.
Mm-hmm. You know, June, one of the things that that ego does to us that I think is, well, there are so many fiendish things, but this is right up there in the top 10, at least, is to convince us that life, our life experience comes from the outside. Mm-hmm. And so if I feel passionate about something, it's because something came into my life and made me passionate.
Yeah.
But in my experience, were you going to say more?
Oh, I'm just, yeah. Yeah, there. I'm noticing how often I do believe that.
Yeah. But what we know to be true when we look a little closer is passion comes from giving ourselves heart and soul to something, bringing all of our attention and awareness to something. So I've got this you know, you know my very favorite. I have a lot of favorite quotes, but my very favorite quote of all time is the one about, this is the true joy in life, the being used for a purpose recognized by yourself as a mighty one, the being thoroughly worn out before you're thrown on the scrap heap, the being a force of nature instead of a feverish, selfish little clod of ailments and grievances complaining that the world will not devote itself to making you happy.
Ooh.
And there it is, right? I mean, that's what you're describing, those two places in life.
Come on, world, show me what the next thing is. What's wrong with you? Why aren't
you making me happy? Yeah, make me happy. Give me some passion. Give me something. Yeah, and of course it's the something more. Right? I'm tired. I'm tired of everything in my life.
Yeah.
I'm tired of everything as it is. I need something new, something exciting, something to spark me. Give me that.
Yeah.
Which underlines the selfish piece of that quote, you know, that self-centered place that we get to when ego is just allowed to devote itself to the unhappiness that feeds it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. So. So passion is a process.
Passion is a process of presence. We could call them the three P's, by golly. Passion is a process of presence. Because when we're here, life, the life force that flows through us is definitely passionate. And it's funny, we were kidding about it early on. You know, you hear that whatever the signal is that you're unmuted, and whoosh, comes the energy, comes the life force, right? Mm-hmm. And I was kidding about living in that all the time, and we can. So that's the place to explore, right? Not why I'm lacking passion and the stories about that, but where is the passion? I know it's here. I know it's here. I know it exists because I felt it before. How do I find that? How do I feel it again? Because it's in me. It's in me. Where is it? Yeah.
Yeah.
It could be a passionate search.
Yeah.
All right.
Thank you.
Happy
passion.
Happy passion. Yeah. Go passionately.
Yes, thank you.
All right, thanks, June.
Thank you.
Thanks, June.
Bye-bye.
What a powerful conversation, Sherry, that process that we keep looking at, that conditioning always focuses the attention on the external and causes us to forget that everything that we are, that life force is what animates us. And that it's almost, ego is like a throttle to life force, right?
Yes.
When the aperture is wide open, we feel full of life, and that's the experience of passion. And then when the throttle is, when the attention is such that ego has all the attention, then that the throttle is throttled down, and, you know, we don't have access to that life force, and we feel unhappy.
Lacking in passion.
And I just love it. Yeah, I just love that point that you made, which is part of what requires us to open the aperture is to shift the attention from the egocentricity. That if it's in giving that the passion gets released, not in that demand of ego to receive for itself.
Yeah. It's in giving that we get. It really is true.
St. Francis's prayer.
Yeah, we can't do it for that, but that is it. So we find it, passion usually exists for people in wanting to contribute, wanting to participate, wanting to do something that makes a difference.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes, and participation being the key.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Engaging in life so that the life force is engaged.
Yes. Engaging in life, yeah, that's it. Mm-hmm. Then it becomes a
I believe
circle.
We have, yes. Mm-hmm. I believe we have time for one more caller, Sherry. So here we go. Next caller, you're now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Isotta from Lima.
Hey, how are you?
Fantastic, you know, that I'm in this moment, I'm seeing the sun for the first time since I left the monastery. Because it was so gray for all these days. And now he said, you're muted, and bam, the sun came out after a month.
Wow, that's a lot of gray days, huh?
Yeah. But, well, nothing to complain about. Happy to be here.
No. Yes, exactly. You can enjoy that. And then when the sun comes, we can enjoy that.
Exactly. So, and I'm very happy. But anyway, I love the climate here, so I don't have any complaints. But let's talk about just one thing. You know, it was so interesting. I'm so thankful for Sangha because there are some experiences that I don't know if I will have in life, you know, like having kids or stuff like that. And so having other people experience it and share it, it's so helpful, you know, because it kind of allows me to live or to see how we are all the same and how I can live other experience through other people. It's really fantastic. I'm really thankful.
Yes, and it's sort of that is such an important point, because what we see ego do is try to separate us from other people. Instead of that view that you're expressing, where everybody on this planet has something unique to offer, and we could take advantage of that. Instead of having to be, what is it, 7 billion people or whatever it is, instead of having to be all of that, everybody can be a version, you know, be their rendition, and we can appreciate all of that human experience. But instead, we're conditioned to judge people and push them away and criticize them and not want to know about them.
Oh, yes, and this has so much to do with the thing I was looking at. I think it's from a couple of assignments ago, but it's the thing that had more impact on me. There was the thing about what you are most insecure about and how it affects your life. Mm-hmm. And I realized that all the different things that I wrote all had to do with the idea that I guess many people have, that it's unsafe to be at the center of the attention, you know? And I think it has to do with this thing that you're describing, you know? Instead of thinking that we each have something to offer, there is like this idea that, oh my God, it's vain, you know, you shouldn't be at the center of attention because that is disrespectful towards other people. And also mm-hmm. it's unsafe, you know.
Mm-hmm. You're a target.
You're a target, right? Exactly.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And yes, and so everybody hangs back and listens to critical voices in the head. Have a conversation about me, about you, about them, about that. And we do that instead of jumping out there and living life.
Yes, exactly.
Mm-hmm. We miss our lives because we're listening to a story, an ego fear story about what will people think.
And my version of the story is like, oh, you don't want to step over other people, you know? Well, I think a lot of people have this version, you know? And so nobody does anything. Nobody expresses themselves, you know?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, what just dropped in when you said that is one of the things that we can do, of course, is ask people about themselves.
Like in which sense?
Well, there you are in a group of people, And the voices are saying, you know, you can't put yourself out there because that will be disrespectful to them. Well, we can put them out there. You know,
we can
turn attention to them and find out about them and appreciate them and like that. We could, that would be a possibility.
Oh, yes, it is. Yes, yes, and it's so relaxing also, you know. It's so beautiful to hear other people, yeah, instead of having to entertain everybody, yeah.
So, give that a go and let us know how
it goes. I will, and I will report back.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Thank
you,
Itzhoka.
A big show to everyone.
All right. Good show.
Thanks, Itzhoka. And Sherry, that brings us to the end of another fabulous show. Our assignment is, what would you like to have? What would you like to do? What would you like to be? Record and listen.
What would you like to have? What would you like to do? What would you like to be? That's great. And, of course, I'm so wildly curious about that, the 10 things down to the 3 things. But, you know, there's just, I don't know. We need more time. Probably not, huh? I guess we're okay as we are.
Yeah. Well, maybe someone will report on that tomorrow.
Maybe so. Maybe so. All right. Thank you so much, Ashwini. And thanks to everybody.
Jay.
All right.
Take care and treasure yourself.
Bye-bye.